This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's the most resilient parasite?
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Can build cities, can transform the world, and rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
It's going to work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
What it do?
Oh,
what is up? Great Thursday.
I did a bunch of blow. We got a short show, so
yeah,
I'm ready. I'm fired up.
Yeah,
you're going to get me on like at 11 all day today.
Good. That's
well, at least
what I want.
For the next 15 minutes before I crash hard.
Yeah, well.
Well, I did it too early. You know,
that's normal.
I got to pace it out. I should have been like 2:45. I did it like right when I woke up, so I could be crashing at any moment. But
I can't see you.
No?
No.
Why is that?
Do I look different today?
Well, the sun's kind of behind you, so you've got like a weird shadow cast above you.
What's happening?
I went to the eye doctor for the first time in years.
Oh, well, I thought you had LASIK.
I did, but that doesn't mean your eyesight doesn't deteriorate.
Yeah, sometimes you need touch-ups and stuff, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you had LASIK.
Touch-ups. I got a little Botox.
Yeah, a little crow's feet. So did they do the little droppers on you?
Yeah, I got my eyes
dilated.
Yeah, and I can't see a damn thing.
Oh, okay.
You're very blurry.
Really?
You're much better. Well, I mean, I'm exaggerating. But you know
shapes,
how it is.
It's pixelation. Like you're working on an old 16-bit video game.
You look great, blurry.
Oh, that's what I do.
I'm very used to getting my eyes dilated. I get that like once or twice a year.
I should be wearing glasses, and I don't. So I just kind of squint my way through everything.
I now know how you feel because I've been diagnosed with glasses.
Even after LASIK, huh?
Yep.
Ooh.
That's what happens.
Yeah, it does happen.
LASIK's like, only good for like 10, 15 years, and then you got to start. You either got to get it redone or you just got to go glasses again.
I'm at about 15 years. And you don't have to get it redone, but
you are getting old.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 44 now.
Yeah. My buddy that's a doctor always does that when someone's like, hey, what's the condition I've got? And he's like, yeah, it's called getting old.
Yeah.
And it's not for the weak of heart.
So she's like, you have pretty good eyesight, but we can make it better, you know, and I'm going to give you some progressives. You know what that means?
No, I don't.
Progressive lenses means like they're good for distances. Mid-level and close-up, you know?
Oh.
Like, because I bought readers recently. Remember I told you that?
Yeah.
So, I got to get glasses, bro. But yeah. I know how you feel in a sense that I don't really want them, and I probably won't ever wear them.
No, and that's my problem.
And they're expensive.
They really are. Every year, my kids... Well, my son got contacts this year for the first time, but for years, both of my kids, the younger ones, have gotten glasses, and I swear, like, we have eye insurance.
Yeah.
And I always have to, like, ask the lady. I'm like, I thought I had eye insurance.
She's like, oh, yeah, this is with your insurance.
This is with the insurance. You're like, holy hell.
I know.
It's just, it's offensive how much eyeglasses are, but I...
Just wear contacts if you don't want to wear the glasses.
Yeah, that's not happening either.
I don't like contacts.
I'm not dealing with contacts. I'm not sticking anything in my eye. I've honestly,
I like the on-off. I like to be, if I'm going to wear glasses, there will be times like where, like on the show, I might wear them because we've got two computer screens here and things,
sure.
Right? But then I also want to be able to take them off. Hmm. Like, I don't want contacts like in there all the time.
Well, the problem that I have
once you get used to them, you don't even notice them.
Yeah.
Like, it's just part of, like, I wear contacts every day, all day.
I'm telling you, I want to take them on and off. Like the contact thing, I used to wear contacts before LASIK. Contacts are right out.
Yeah.
They're the worst.
Yeah. I just it's a non-starter
for
me.
Total pain in the ass.
And I only need glasses to see distance. I can see close up. And how much do I really need to see at a distance, right? Like, I get a general idea of what's happening out there, and I can just close my one eye and squint my way through a lot of things, so I'm fine. I'm like, I honestly got diagnosed with glasses like 15 years ago, maybe even longer, and I wore them for, I don't know, a month, and then that didn't happen. And then I want to say 8 or 9 years ago, I made an attempt at glasses again, and that lasted... I don't know, a week or two. And then my dog ate them. And I swear that, like, dog ate the homework.
Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah. Crumb came and demolished them, and I haven't been back since.
I think the difference here is that both of you have fine enough vision.
Yes.
Without corrective
lenses.
That
is definitely the difference.
Whereas I am completely blind.
Yeah.
I can see literally nothing.
Yeah.
It's just one big blur. So then I contacts, have to wear my contacts.
Contacts are good. Yeah. So I've been in your shoes before LASIK. I had terrible eyesight, and so I had to wear either glasses or contacts. And contacts are easier because you don't have to worry about anything. It's just one a day or like depending.
I have dailies because I like to change them out. Yeah.
So I would say though that you're right. Like when you get them and you don't have to wear them, you're not going to wear them.
No.
It's like,
and I like to wear
it's a pain in the ass.
And I wear sunglasses a lot. And so.
Yeah, you're a sunglasses indoors guy.
I like wearing sunglasses.
Do you guys know that about Big Sook? He's sunglasses indoors guy now.
Me and Tom Likas.
Just radio things going
Swagger.
To his head.
Yeah, Swag does that. And so like the idea of having glasses and then having to take off or get prescription sunglasses, it's all.
You know what else she told me?
Until it reaches a point where it's that bad, nuts to it.
Well, first of all, I was telling her the story of.
Oh, so the optometrist told you.
My eye doctor?
Yeah. I thought you said. Yeah, I was confused there. You said something.
Don't be confused.
Okay.
Yeah, she. That's who I saw. But I got a new eye doctor. She's right here down by us. And so I talked to her today.
Yeah.
Because I haven't been to the eye doctor since the Stone Ages.
Yeah.
Since getting LASIK.
Me neither. And I didn't have LASIK.
I told her the story of my eye doctor or my LASIK surgeon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was the.
Do you remember that whole thing?
Oh, I remember. I was at the dinner.
Yeah, that's right.
Because they were going to
We ate it at ringside,
yeah,
didn't
they
we?
Yeah, they were going to do it. No,
Ruth's Chris?
I thought it was the Met. Anyway, we
the
were
the Met.
Yeah, I think we were
we ate at the Met.
The Metropolitan Grill.
Well, they don't. What? What's we don't have one here.
What's the?
Oh, the other. Oh.
What am I thinking of?
The.
Anyway, we were he took
the steakhouse
us,
down there.
He took us out to a nice dinner.
Dr. Makovac.
Yeah, because my wife was going to do it. They wanted both of us to do it.
That's right.
But my wife had really bad eyes.
I forgot about that.
And so they were going to do it for you, and they were going to do it for Beck. And we had a meeting, all of us. And then it turned out.
It was a great night.
It was. He was super,
super
nice.
Super nice guy. He's in prison.
Yeah. He tried to have people rubbed out.
And he did.
And not in the good, like, fun.
He tried to rub out his
massage parlor way.
His partner. And it was a whole thing. Yeah. Russian, like, hitman. And, like, it was a whole thing.
Yeah.
So I was telling her about that. And she couldn't stop laughing.
I remember here. Like,
but when
that,
she did.
We were like,
Yeah, like I was like, what?
Awkward.
Stepping back, stepping away. But he did a great. She was like, dude, he did a great job on your eyes.
Oh well,
because she just checked my eyes. She was like, okay, well, oh my god, who was your surgeon? He was great.
Well,
I don't know. Maybe you can call him at Leavenworth State Penitentiary.
He's probably at Walla Walla.
He can talk to you about it.
Well, so look, he's got some. He's got some flaws. I've got.
He only
got
20 years.
Well, see,
no one died, and he only got 20 years.
With good behavior, he's probably out in 10 to 12.
Yeah, I think when he gets out, he'd be able to do it again for me.
A little touch up, maybe by then. You know, I'm in the market for something.
But it's so weird. I had a murderer with a laser on my eyes.
Attempted.
I mean,
attempted,
but still.
And he wanted someone else to do it for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that change things for you?
Well, he wasn't the murderer.
No, he wasn't.
He was hiring.
He was the murderer by association.
He didn't want no blood on his hands.
No. Well, you can't murder
him. So does that make it better for you?
Look, I found
because it doesn't for me.
I found it.
Especially when he's hovering over my eyeballs with a laser.
Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't have any rub with you.
No, he didn't, but I will say this.
He was not as far
nice.
As you know.
He was a nice guy. I would remember. I would tell you this, that I do remember, because they kind of sedate you for LASIK.
Yeah.
But LASIK's super easy. I would recommend it to anyone. I really would. It was great. And I remember being in the surgery where he's lasering my eyes.
Sure.
He was super, mean to his staff. Like he was super demanding.
Uh-huh.
Like uncomfortably so, to the point where it's like, wow, this guy's like,
he's like, I will kill you.
He's
you're like, oh,
I mean, I won't, but no, I have someone who will.
I know people
scalpel
that will do this.
So anyway, she laughs. She's like, he did a really good job. And then I said, okay, so what is my vision? She's like, oh, you have pretty good vision. But then she goes, you'd be surprised. She goes, a lot of people, because you know they do the one or two,
sure,
which is better. B or C.
And that's half the time I don't know which one's better.
Sometimes they get to that point, but there was clearly, I mean, if it's more clear and crisp, I'm like, oh, I like that one. And she's like, you'd be surprised how many people don't want that.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
She's like, people, there are some people that don't want better vision.
They don't want to see.
No, they don't want it that crisp.
Huh.
And I was like, what?
Why would you?
I remember when I got my contacts adjusted last year, and they upped my prescription a little bit. And I have an astigmatism, so I had to get special contacts for that. I remember I went to a restaurant that night, and I was looking around. I was like, this is amazing. Everything is so clear. I can see everything on the wall. Now, how would you not want that?
Now, I will say that when when I got glasses,
according
years,
to her,
years. And by the way, Portland City Grill is where we went. I don't know why I couldn't think of that.
Are you sure?
I'm positive.
Okay.
When I got glasses years and years ago,
I didn't pay.
No, he picked up the tab.
The whole thing. Look, there's like eight people.
That's an expensive place too.
If he can afford murder, he can afford our little, you know, shindig or whatnot. Yeah, it's on you. But I remember when I got glasses.
Murder might be cheaper than eight people at Portland City Grill.
It's true. I remember walking out of the place, and I really can't read anything from more than, let's say, 15, 20 feet away. And it's pretty, you know, it's pretty blurry at that point, unless you're talking about like a big billboard or something. And I remember wearing the glasses out and being like, holy crap. Same thing that you had. I was like, oh, look at that. But then I realized I don't really need it. It's kind of cool. Like, I guess, like, but I don't need it.
I don't need to see.
Again, what do I need to see in like, real clarity that's 20-plus feet away? I can see the car coming.
Maybe you're going to miss a woman who's a model and topless.
Yeah, trust me. That I can squint my way through that. Uh-huh. The only thing that I have a problem with,
I see a boob.
Is, like, that could be an elbow. Subtitles or the little menu when you pull up a TV, that's pretty sketch for me.
I just found out something.
What?
That I'd like to relate to you all, because I'm probably not supposed to be talking about this.
Probably not.
Because they were a client. Like, it was, you know.
Yeah. I think they're still around. But he's not.
Well,
I
mean, no, it's a different.
It was a news story.
The guy who was supposed to be murdered is living and still has the practice, which he should, because he owned it the whole time. Mm-hmm. It's just.
I think it's out in my neck of the woods.
Anyway, there's an Oxygen show, you know, the channel. Yeah. Oxygen.
Isn't that Oprah's channel?
Yeah, I think. There's a show on there, or the documentary called Murder for Hire, about this story.
Get right the hell out of town.
Yeah.
Solid.
No, I mean, no. Oh, wait, yeah. No, I won't.
You won't. No, stay here. I'd watch that.
I would too.
I mean, we partied.
Or why they didn't call me.
Not really, but yeah. Like, hey, but I'll tell you what, the LASIK was fantastic.
Hey, he was really good at what he did.
Yeah, the murder, not so much. Well, he wasn't very good at murder, but apparently he was good at LASIK.
Well, anyway, hopefully it'll wear off here in a couple hours.
Yeah.
We got a turn and burn day today.
Yeah, we've got
you guys.
5:30.
Ducks. Cougs? Yeah, they're Washington State.
Yeah, it's Washington State.
Yeah. So that's on tonight. So we gotta get going. We've got Jason Quick, our Blazers insider, at 3:30. Did you read his Brandon Roy piece?
It was really, really good. And more importantly, dare I say, finally, a good win?
Yeah, they won that.
Yes!
Last night. Did you watch it?
That's the first good win that they've had.
Yeah, that's a good win.
I mean, I guess the Maverick.
I only saw the final score, so I don't know how it went down.
Yeah,
but.
The Maverick win, I suppose. But, I mean, it was a good win. And James Harden had like 13 points.
Well, anyway, Quick will be on at 3:30. He did do a feature on Brandon Roy, which is great because we've all kind of been waiting for some sort of like closure to that deal. You know what I mean?
Quite possibly my favorite athlete that we've ever covered in the 15 plus years we've been doing this.
He was great.
He was.
And that's a very complex thing with what happened with Roy and everything. But we'll get to Quick on that because he sat down with Roy. Roy finally opened up because he's been like really, I mean, we've known where he was and he's been in the news. You know, you had the shooting and you had the basketball. He was the high school basketball coach, won a couple titles. So we've known where he was and, you know, what he was doing, but he's never really addressed what went on in Portland and kind of how it ended and everything. Mm-hmm. And he finally did. He was ready to do it. And Jason Quick got a hold of him and put the piece together. So we'll talk to him about that.
Yeah, I spent like 3 days with him and it was pretty in depth. And then I was listening. He was on Dirt and Sprague too and said that he's got a whole other notebook full of stuff that he couldn't put in the piece. And then he'd like to do a follow-up as well.
So 3:30 for Quick. And then we'll do our NFL picks. NFL games this weekend?
You are correct.
Two of them.
There is.
We'll do that at 4. We'll start with a little bit of NFL coming up next, but the big topic today is angry Yankee fans about the Astros and the Red Sox.
Yeah, and we've got buzzers.
Mike's all over this story.
Mike is. Mike's like tweeting us things, and it's a whole...
He's all over it.
Well, there's buzzers now involved.
Well, baseball's my favorite sport, and this is drama, which is always great.
It does get more elaborate.
It's getting... Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's getting interesting.
It's getting more than just banging some trash cans.
So what were the Astros doing that we found out about now? Yes, buzzers. We'll get to that coming up, too. It's 316 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, Jason Quick, our Blazers insider in 10 minutes. We'll get the lowdown on Brandon Roy and how he remembers his time in Portland and if he's coming back.
Yeah, it was only 5 years. Like, I just, in my mind, I think it was longer than that, but it was such
It was an important 5 years.
It was.
But that'll be in 10 minutes. Our AAA heating and cooling poll question today. Family business helping families for over 50 years. AAAIAQ.com. 1080thefan.com, which underdog has the best shot at winning the big game? Now, for something so simple as Will Darkins and I putting, like, I send him the poll question and then he puts it up.
Yeah.
We oftentimes have, we have an exorbitant number of mistakes.
Clerical errors.
Well, what I meant was, which underdog has the best shot this weekend?
Yeah.
But I should have stated that clearer. So it reads, which underdog has the better shot at winning the big game? That isn't technically what I meant, but look, that's the poll question. So just vote on
so
it.
So we're going with who has the best chance to win the Super Bowl as opposed to who's winning the game this weekend.
I was asking, which underdog do you think has a better chance of winning this weekend?
I still say the answer is the same for me.
Which is what? They're both?
I'm going to take Tennessee.
Oh, Tennessee has a better shot than the Packers?
I do.
To you?
I do. I think the way Tennessee's playing right now. Yeah, I do not. I promise you that I have no chance.
You won't win.
To win this weekend, and certainly I'm not going to win the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. Not with my bad back. No, the way Tennessee's playing right now, they're on a heater. Tannehill's been great the second half. You know, Derrick Henry is an unstoppable force. They just got done shutting down the dominant Baltimore team. That most people had as the favorite.
And Andy Reid's a choke artist.
Yes, and they've already beaten Kansas City once. And, you know, what was it, 5-6 weeks ago? You know, San Francisco, who wasn't nearly as healthy as they are now, just beat the bejesus out of Green Bay. So,
see, I'll take
Tennessee.
The rematch thing, I always view it the other way. I don't know how much there is on either side of this in terms of, like, what it really means. But I actually think that if you like Green Bay...
Yeah.
I love the fact that they got blown out the last time they were there.
Do you?
Yeah, because I think it's hard to do that to a team twice, and they're catching points.
It's hard to block San Francisco's front, and Green Bay couldn't do it, and if they better figure something else out. Aaron Rodgers better get rid of the damn football.
Right, but it's the NFL. I mean, it's just never that simple,
yeah.
Right? Like, these teams play twice, these divisional teams play twice all, you know, every year, or obviously every year, mm-hmm. And it just seems like it's two totally different matchups.
Yeah.
Now, that may be wrong. Like I said, it could be that, you should look at what San Francisco did to Green Bay and say, well, why wouldn't they be able to do that again? But Tennessee, Kansas City's the other way. It's like Tennessee already beat them. If I'm a Tennessee fan, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, because I think Kansas City will have a little, they've seen them once, they'll have a little something for them. Because Kansas City practically won that game the first time.
Yeah, they just kind of
let it slip. In control.
And Kansas City's a different team now, but so is Tennessee. But I always use the baseball analogy, right? It's always easier to see a guy the second time around. That's why closers are so hard, right?
Yeah, but which is that good for? Does that even it? I think that in terms of these two games, it might help Kansas City,
yeah,
the big favorite in the first game, but also might help the underdog, the big underdog, in the second game.
Look, at this point, when you're playing here in the Final Four, everyone's got a chance. There's no such thing as you get to this point and there's a bad team. I mean, I think San Francisco, the way they're playing right now, that was really impressive, right? And they're getting healthy in what they did to Minnesota. And that defensive front is sick. The offense is good. You know, I know Garoppolo isn't the greatest thing ever, but it's a good offense and it's a scary good defense right now. But on the other side of things, you still have Aaron Rodgers, right? And it's not as if Green Bay's defense is a sieve, right? Kenny Clark and the two Smiths on the outside, and they've got some talent in the secondary, and you've got Aaron Rodgers, right? They just, you know, if you look through rosters, San Francisco is significantly better than Green Bay. But at the same time, again, you've got Aaron Rodgers. You've got one of the all-time greats there, and you've got a truly elite receiver. You've got a back that's pretty impressive. You have a good old line. I don't think they're as good as some people are making them out to be, but let's Green Bay won 13 games, right? I mean, it wasn't always the most impressive wins in the world, but you won 13 games. So no one can write anyone off. But to me, if you're asking me that question, it wouldn't take me long to say I would gladly take Tennessee over Green Bay as far as odds go.
For this weekend.
For this weekend and moving ahead. Tennessee I said it after last week, they've got a real New York Giants feel about them. The 2 years that the Giants got hot.
You know, the only thing that worries me about them is they have given up a lot of yards, man.
Yeah.
And Kansas City's a better offense than by far New England, and better offense than Baltimore. You know, it's like Kansas City, I think it's just going to come down whether Tennessee can hold them to threes and not sevens, because KC's going to move the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, that secondary is not, the no. Tennessee secondary is not set up to stop Kansas City.
There's not many people that are set up to stop Kansas City.
Right. And so it's sort of a matchup problem for Kansas City in one sense, that Derrick Henry ran for 190 yards the first time on KC, and he's running for 190 yards a game now.
Sure.
I don't see how Kansas City will be able to fully slow him down. If they do, Tennessee's defense won't hold up.
No. Well,
they've got to run Derrick Henry, and they've got to chew the clock.
Well, I think that's the same, honestly, for both squads. Tennessee can't play from behind against Kansas City, and Green Bay can't either. If Green Bay can't figure out a way to run, they do not have a shot against San Francisco. If they get down early, and that may happen. Like I said, I can sit here and say that I don't think Garoppolo is Aaron Rodgers, but I also think that there's a misnomer that Garoppolo's had kind of a so-so season. Garoppolo has been good. You can make the argument that this year, now I know they're being asked to do two different things and it's two different teams, but Garoppolo has had as good, if not a better year than Aaron Rodgers.
Garoppolo's awesome. I mean, he's very good, but he's you heard it here first.
Yeah,
he's going to give him one.
There's a lot of people that don't.
He is going to give Green Bay one in this game.
And he wasn't great against Minnesota. But
will that be the difference in the game? Maybe not. But
if San Francisco falls behind, I don't think that's the end of the world, right? I think if they fall behind early by 10,
they can sling it.
The defense is gonna stiffen. You know, they're not going to continue to leak all four quarters. And, you know, we saw what happened. Green Bay got off to a big lead against Seattle, and you ended up in a dogfight. I think if Green Bay falls behind early, then, you know, do pray for him. Because if you have to abandon the run game and you have to start throwing the ball downfield and you allow that front four, and then if you want to include the pressures, you get to the outside guys with Dee Ford, if you allow them to just rush the quarterback, and you saw what happened the first time they played, and that's what happened.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers can't.
No one can.
And certainly not Green Bay. So both teams, Green Bay and Tennessee, have to win a certain way. They're going to have to come out. Tennessee, obviously, they have to establish a run because it's their identity. But Green Bay, even with Aaron Rodgers, they have to figure out a way to run and limit the number of possessions for San Francisco, slow down this game, and play kind of the same style, because you just can't play from behind against Kansas City and certainly not San Francisco.
All right, we'll have our picks at 4 coming up next. Brandon Roy and Jason Quick sat down for a tout-a-tat? A tat-a-toot? Anyone?
A what?
Like a...
What was that one more?
Twat-a-toot.
Can we...
What?
What?
Did you just...
A tatty toot? You know what I'm talking about.
A tete-a-tete? Don't act like...
Yeah. Well, is that what it is?
I think that's what it is.
A what?
A tete-a-tete?
Yeah, that's what they did, man. They had a tete-a-tete.
A tat-a-toot. I like that.
A tootie-tat.
And I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but I sure as hell know that you weren't.
Well, they spoke.
They did a one-on-one.
Yeah. And a really good piece came of it. So we'll get Jason Quick... in here coming up next to talk about it. Here's Mike.
You get to the fourth, and he has been amazing.
The ultimate insider on Portland basketball and the NBA.
I think Terry Stotts has been very proactive in communicating.
This is the Blazer Fan Insider with Jason Quick, brought to you on The Fan by Change Realty, home of the 1% listing fee.
A tete-a-tete was had.
Yes,
I looked it up. That means like one-on-one meeting, private conversation or interview.
Secret Quick. Conclave, if you will.
So yes. It's not a tooting?
A tooting cat. No, it's a tete-a-tete. And Jason Quick and Brandon Roy sat down for one. Excited. This is like the Well, it was like the dangling carrot for all these years, wasn't it, for you?
Yeah, it sure was. I've been hunting this story for 3 years, and I was just finally able to get enough time and space to go up there and track them down, and I was sure glad I did it. Actually, it's why I had to miss last week's shows, because I was up in Seattle visiting with Brandon last Thursday.
Well, he was just, you know, in all my years of doing this, I know you've been here longer than we have, but I mean, it's been 15, 16 years. I don't know if there was an athlete that I enjoyed more, or honestly, that was more important. I mean, Lillard certainly has done his share, but where this franchise was when he came along and what he meant to the city, I think he's really special.
No question, Sook. I mean, the time that he came into this franchise, I think he really rescued it from a lot of different angles. The fan base was fed up with what the Blazers were. They were the jailblazers. They were bad seeds, bad characters, and they were bad on the court. And people stopped coming to the games. I mean, it was 12,000, 15,000. And around that same time is when, you know, Paul Allen, there was starting to be questions about his commitment to the Blazers. The Rose Garden was up in bankruptcy. And there was if you remember, there was fear that Paul was going to move this franchise or sell the franchise and the Blazers would be no longer. And then here comes Brandon Roy and kind of this golden child with, you know, charisma off the charts, a really slick way of playing. And he was not only good and not only good in the community, but he was one of the most clutch players that I think I've covered. And, you know, he hit big shots, made big defensive plays, made big passes. And he had that gene of coming through in the clutch. And I think that really resonated. His whole package really resonated with this fan base who was thirsting for kind of a bright light in a dark era of this franchise. And he really pulled this franchise out of that dark time. And I think that's why he always has a special place in people's hearts on top of what he did on the court.
This is our Blazers insider, Jason Quick. If you're wondering why we're talking about this, he's finally put together the Brandon Roy piece. It is out. You can go read it on the internet. Is Brandon aware of what he meant to this city and what he represented here?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think to the depths and to the kind of emotion that people have for him. You know, he gave me, he told me that as he was struggling from his departure from the NBA, he would try to turn on a Blazer game and he'd hear the announcer saying, "Oh, what a tragedy. What's happened to Brandon Roy?" And he'd turn it off. And then he would kind of hear other things that, you know, he'd look and see that Damian Lillard has captured the city by storm. LaMarcus has become a franchise star. They're winning playoff series, which Brandon can never do. And that made him feel that, man, Portland they're not even going to remember me. And that gave him a little bit of sadness and a little bit of detachment, I think, from the franchise. So I don't think he understands just how passionately and deeply this fan base, how they revere him. And I think he's if you're talking about a Mount Rushmore of Blazer players, I think he has to be on there just because of how good he was when he played and what he meant emotionally for this franchise.
So when he was, you know, his knees were going south. He wasn't going south, but his knees were, yeah. And you mentioned all the surgeries. We all knew what was going on.
And it happened fast.
When that happened, he says there was a bit of a rift with the Blazers when things started to go south with his knees. Why was that? Describe that and what that was like, because we weren't privy to a lot of that.
That was probably the most surprising thing that came out of my interview with Brandon was his unhappiness throughout his final year in Portland. He felt that even if his knees hadn't totally broken down, that he was going to leave the Blazers or that the Blazers were going to part ways with him. His frustration was that okay, he ended up having to have double knee surgery that year in January. And when he came back, he felt like the team had already moved on from him. He remembers rejoining the team in Toronto, and literally nobody talked to him except for Jay Jensen. LaMarcus Aldridge was, as you know, kind of a to-himself guy. Andre Miller, very famous for being to himself. Wesley Matthews, very intense. They were in their own thing. They had been playing 30 games without Brandon Roy. And when the franchise player, you know, the guy whose picture's on the side of the Rose Garden came back, they had moved on and moved past him. And then when Brandon, it came time for him to be back in the lineup, he came off the bench and he thought Nate McMillan didn't play him enough. He only averaged 20 minutes a game, and he felt that he still had Brandon Roy moments in him, and that he could have, if he was allowed to play a bigger role, that they could have beaten Dallas in that playoff series. And it came to a head in game two of that playoff series. If you remember, he only played 8 minutes, and after that game, he, you know, I kind of cornered him in the back hallway, and he said, I had to hold back tears on the bench. I couldn't believe that I had reached this point with this franchise. And he still felt like he had stuff in the tank. And he did, because two games later, he had one of the greatest moments in Blazers history when he had the 18-point fourth quarter and led him back from 23-point deficit. But that feeling of kind of the coach and the players and the franchise moving on kind of stung him a little bit.
How much of that do you think was the fact that they had just given him a bunch of money? Was there bitterness there, or was it a sense of everyone knew what was happening and it was almost like, let's move on, as opposed to, I don't know, trying to hold on to something that we know is ending and it's ending quickly? Why did that happen?
Well, I think part of it is kind of the mentality of Nate McMillan. He's a big, you know, next man up guy, and we're going to win with the players we have. He doesn't worry about the guys who are hurt or rehabbing or going through whatever. And so he kind of pushed that thinking on the team. I think that they were very tunnel vision and working toward making the playoffs rather than worrying about what Brandon was doing. And I think they had, you know, that, I think that team won 54 games or something like that. They were a successful team. So I think he was like, what we've been doing is working. We don't need Brandon to come in and play a huge role. So, but as far as the money and stuff, you know, Brandon told the story of the year prior, the 2010 playoffs, when he had knee surgery and then came back 8 days later and played in that playoff series against the Suns. You remember when he came in and they played the Rocky theme music and stuff? Before that game, when he was urging the team that he wanted to play, and Kevin Pritchard at the time said, okay, we just signed you to an $82 million contract. I need to get clearance for this. So he brought Paul Allen into the locker room, and they had a face-to-face, Brandon Roy, Paul Allen, and Brandon said, I want to play. And Paul said, okay, you think you can do it? And you know, there was no hesitation of, hey, man, I just paid you a lot of money. I want to protect my investment. It was like, if you want to play, you go play. And so Paul gave him the green light to play on the knee 8 days after surgery. And, you know, as Brandon Roy told me, looking back, he sleeps well thinking that he played it right, because he knew his knees were breaking down. And as he put it to me, he had to chase those moments. They were there and he had to go grab them. And he went after them anytime he could. That's why he did his knee surgeries both at a time the next year before the Dallas playoff series. He didn't want to do one knee and then the other knee like the team wanted him to do, because he knew he'd be out for the playoffs. He wanted to get both knees done at the same time so he could get back and have that playoff moment. So, you know, he looks back and says, I played it right, because if I would have played it like the team wanted me to, I wouldn't have been able to have that game four memory of the fourth quarter against Dallas.
Well, he knew it. Athletes know it. He knew his body was failing him.
Yeah. And, you know, he told me stories of he would get his knee drained 10 to 20 times a year. And they had a system where they knew that if they drained all the fluid out, it was too painful because they had the bone on bone. They needed to leave fluid in there to kind of lubricate and provide cushion for his knees, because he had had so many surgeries that all the meniscus and cartilage was gone. And he was able to tell how much liquid to leave in there because he got used to playing with his knees at a certain weight. There was a certain amount of fluid in there that had a weight. And so he knew by how much his knees weighed, of how much fluid they were taking out. But, you know, he described that it was just a process to get out of bed and to the shower and, you know, eating all these anti-inflammatory. I remember always being by his locker and interviewing him, and they would come by and just flop down like this long stream of pills, you know, and the clear thing that you had to pop out of the back. And they were just anti-inflammatory pills, and just, it was like a magazine of bullets that they would just lay on his chair, and he'd take those home, you know? So it was a process, and he was going through a lot. And I think, you know, he told me one of his biggest frustrations about all this is that people didn't really fully realize what he was going through just to be able to get on the court and play.
So I've got so many more questions. Can you come back for another segment, or should we just pepper you with them now?
No, I can come back for another segment.
All right, I'm going to put you on hold. Thank you, Jason. This is Jason Quick, our Blazers insider. He wrote a long piece on Brandon Roy, caught up with Brandon Roy. And I do think a lot of Blazer fans, you know, are interested in this topic because there was never much closure.
No, it's a really good, it's a long
how
piece
that ended.
It's really good.
So go check that out. And I want to ask him about the shooting. We don't know a lot about that. And Brandon Roy, of course, got shot. And so he addresses that in the piece as well. We'll get to that next though. Stay right there. 3:46 on the Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, we're smack dab in the middle of chatting with our Blazers insider, Jason Quick, who has done it again, a great piece on Brandon Roy, who's now, well, he has been, it remains up in Seattle. Let's go chronologically. So the Blazers, it ends with the Blazers, and then we have the Minnesota thing where he comes back, and he says in your piece, he says, you know, look, he really needed to try that, and it showed him that it was over. And he moves on. A question I've always had about him was, we actually had a very good relationship with him here, and Souk and I have not had great relationships with athletes over the years. As a matter of fact, very few, but with him we did. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it was him. Just he understood what we did. He was on our show a lot.
To you guys. Still listen to you guys.
Is that right?
Get the hell out of town.
Yeah. Dude, he was...
Because he says he hears me on there, you know?
Yeah. Oh, he listens to us for you. Yeah. Okay.
No. That he said, I've heard you on the radio. Well, where else would you hear me on the radio?
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's hilarious. Well, we had a good relationship with him because we did a lot of remotes with him where we were face-to-face, and he came on the show for long periods of time, and Lardell, we had the old deal with his buddy Lardell, and they were just fun, and they got what we did, and we understood them, and... My question is, when he left here, and then even sort of after the Minnesota thing, it sort of felt like he had a grudge against a lot of his relationships here, the Blazers, Portland in general, and he sort of recoiled, and he just became reclusive. Why was that, or am I misreading that?
I don't think it had anything to do with Portland. It had to do with basketball and him being hurt and him losing his identity and trying to figure out, okay, now I've played basketball since I was six, and it's been my life, and now I don't have it, and it's not by my choice. I want to still play, but I can't, and it hurts. And he was depressed, and he was questioning who he was. He was going through all those things where he just didn't want to be out in public. He didn't want to watch basketball, be around basketball, be asked about basketball. So he kept to himself. And really, I mean, Brandon is a pretty private guy to begin with. I mean, he's great in public when he's and great in interviews and all that, but he's not an attention seeker. He doesn't like being out there, and he doesn't draw attention to himself. So at his core, he's kind of a to himself guy. But then when you threw the hurt and the frustration of having his career ended so early, and the mental, the mental pretzel that put him, that it created, that's why he kind of distanced himself and kind of holed up in Seattle for a couple of years.
Well, walk us through the process then. Like, is obviously, you know, I know not everything's hunky dory, but he does seem to be in a bit of a better place. And I know he went through the bad divorce in there, but kind of walk us through basically what he's been doing since.
Well, he didn't kind of come out of his shell until 2015. So it was pretty much two and a half years where he was just kind of a recluse and really struggled with it, didn't watch it. And even when his kids would say, "Daddy, is this really you?" And show him a highlight, he'd be like, "Yeah, but I don't want to talk about it." And it wasn't until 2015 that his son started asking more questions, and he kind of felt bad about it and wanted to start including them. And so he went down to Garfield, his old high school, and some of the guys that he knew were running the team. And so he kind of started opening the gyms in the summer on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And just being in the gym, and he talked about the smells of fall and the smells of the gym and just being around it again, he kind of started coming out of his shell and kind of realizing, hey, I've got to move on and I've got to mature and accept this. And so it was around then, and then he agreed to coach. And I think that was a positive for him. He went to Nathan Hale, you know, the Porter brothers, who are very highly regarded, transferred there. He wins a state title. And a cool thing for him was to get joy from basketball. And he wasn't the one making a shot. He wasn't the one making the plays, but he still found that he got incredible pleasure from that. And he talked about winning that first state title and putting the trophy in his car, buckling it up and driving it to his house and then putting it on his couch and just being immensely proud and happy. And he said he remembered sitting there celebrating with himself and going, "And I didn't do anything. I didn't make a shot or anything," and just looking at the trophy and feeling really proud about it. So I think that basketball kind of helped him, ironically, come out of his funk of missing basketball. But then he got shot, and that kind of reprioritized it made him kind of refocus what was important to him. And what is important to him was his family, his kids, because that's what he said he thought about when he was in the ambulance going to the hospital was, "Man, what if I died, you know, and what if I left my kids? That would be awful." So, but, you know, another important thing in there, in that time frame, is when he started coaching was right when he started his divorce from his high school sweetheart and the mother of three of his four kids. And it was a bad divorce, and he really struggled with it. And that combined with the high profile job of coaching Michael Porter Jr., who's now in the NBA, and the newness of starting to run a program, being a high school coach and going through the divorce, it really wore on him and stretched him thin. And then he got shot. And instead of really kind of taking time to recalibrate and to recover, he kept pushing on, and he switched jobs and went to Garfield, his alma mater, and coached through that. But it was a really interesting process because he felt a tremendous amount of guilt for being shot. And he said, "Look, you know, there's a stigma that comes with being shot, you know, that you're involved in bad stuff." And he said, "I wasn't involved in any bad stuff." And he was really reluctant to talk about the shooting because they still don't know much about why, who, you know, the particulars of why it happened. And that scares him. He's like, "I don't know if I was targeted. They don't think I was, but they don't know if I was targeted. So I don't want to be out here talking a lot about it and then have those guys, you know, be like, okay, we're not going to miss this time, you know? And so there, I think there was an element of fear with that. And this element of guilt that he didn't want his kids looking at him that, yeah, my daddy got shot. So there was a lot that he had to process, and he didn't really take care of it. He thought he kind of had this machismo that, nope, I can power through this just like a player. I'm going to continue coaching. And he did, and they won a state title. But in the middle of that season, he was like, what am I doing? I'm going crazy. I'm going through this divorce, all this feeling of guilt and being scared, having these nightmares of dying. You know, he said he would wake up at night either gasping for air out of being scared or being just soaked in sweat. Because he had this reoccurring dream of the shooting, but each time he would die, and it would just freak him out. His bed would be soaked. He'd have to go get towels and lay him on the bed. And it was a really traumatic experience, as you can probably imagine. So all this was going on, and he wasn't taking care of it. And after he won his second state title, he went to the school and said, I need to take a year off. I need to worry about Brandon. And that's when he kind of recalibrated himself and started to get on this path towards happiness. And he was very clear to me to be like, look, quick, don't make it out to be that I'm at this peak of happiness and everything's sunshine. That's not where I'm at. I'm on my way to that. I'm in a much better place right now. Things are looking positive. I feel like I'm in a place where I'm comfortable being back on the public stage. But it's been a process, and he's had to go through things.
Yeah, some of that's just age. You know, I mean, he's been through a lot, but, you know, he's 35 now. So, yeah, that's interesting. I guess I have to ask this question, but do you believe him when he says he doesn't know anything about the shooting? Or is that, I mean, is it possible that he knows more about what that was about than anybody else?
Oh, I suppose it's possible. I do. I mean, I tend to believe him. I mean, he was pretty, I felt like he was being forthright. That's my sense, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't say for certain.
You think they're going to retire his jersey here?
I do. I don't have any indication from the Blazers that that's going to happen. But, you know, as I've said before, when they have a new player come, like Carmelo Anthony, for example, who wore number 7, when new players come to the Blazers and they're given the sheet of jersey numbers that they can choose from, number 7 is not included as an option for players coming to Portland. And that, to me, one, shows the respect and how this organization views Brandon, and I think it gives an indication that, hey, there are future plans for that number.
All right, well, great job by you piecing all that together. It was really good.
Yeah, I encourage everyone to go read it. It's well done, long piece, and well worth the read.
And I'm sure there's way more that you couldn't fit in there. Maybe we'll get a part two or something. But great job by you. Go ahead.
Thanks. I'm actually working on that part two thing where. Uh-huh. He talks about his relationship with Andre Miller, with Nate McMillan. You know, another thing too, I mean, he's gone through 2 PRP procedures on his back. He had degenerative knees. He also had a degenerative spine. And so he's had to have that twice. He ruptured his Achilles playing City League, men's league basketball. So his physical stuff hasn't ended. Yeah.
Well, if you talk to him again, tell him hi for us, because we actually really did.
Yeah, we enjoyed
I mean, that's
him
one
a lot.
Dude that man, we just liked him. I pull for him in any facet of life. He's a great dude.
He's a guy that is easy to root for and easy to respect. And I don't know. I just think he means a lot to this city and to Blazer fans. And it was just really cool to reconnect with him and to see him on his way to being in a good place.
Yeah, hope he gets there. Jason, thank you.
All right.
Take care. All right. Talk to you next week. Jason Quick, every, what's today, Thursday?
Yeah, we didn't even get to the Rockettes.
Oh, wait, they won last night.
They did. Well, not the Rockets. The Blazers did.
Well, let's let them string together a few more, and then we'll...
Yeah, let's not worry about it right now.
We'll talk to Quick next Thursday. Every Thursday, 3:30, right here on The Fan. All right, our NFL picks for championship weekend coming up next on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.